podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don Neely view system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Oh, fucking gay! Welcome to FML Field. I'm Milan.
It's Walsh.
Let's fucking shout out the winner. He's still top of the table. He's top of the table like pretty much all season. Anton Johansson,
we have a special fireside chat pod coming up. Maybe in a couple weeks we'll put it out with an interview with 45th overall Anton.
Yeah, let's do it like next week or something.
Wow. Yeah, next week.
Last pod of the season, really.
Postmortem pod.
Postmortem pod. We just fresh off the championship final.
Captain everyone against Huddersfield Town next year.
Yeah, they're not going to be good.
They're not going to do it.
But if they have Danny Ward,
for now,
maybe he'll cost $4 million and be our Pickford next year.
Yeah, maybe. So finished up the season. How did it go for you?
Yeah, I mean, I fucked it off. I went rogue. Like I stopped. I don't know at what point in the season I kind of gave up, probably when I was still like over 300K in like game week 30 or something. But so I took the 16-point hit in game week 37 for the doubles and I went up and then I continued with the madness and took an 8-point hit in game week 38, trying to just like salvage any respectability in it. So I ended up on a red arrow. But, you know, it's like stupid. I didn't captain Kane because I wanted to captain a differential, but obviously, as I wrote in lineup lambs, like there was no one else really to captain and shit like that. But you know, 160K, very unhappy with that final rank. I think I could do a lot better if I fuck around less and follow the herd a little bit more and take less hits. But it was a fun season. How about you?
Yeah. I finished up 16K for the second straight season. It was 16K last year.
Really?
Yeah, it's like 400 or 500 places higher than I finished than I was last year.
Whoa,
so
that's weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. So overall, I don't know. I mean, pretty okay, I guess, on that. But I really don't feel too good if I'm outside the top 10K with the amount that you know we put into it. So hopefully, I can learn some lessons from this year and take it into next season and try and cement top 10K throughout the season and have a better year.
Yeah, it's like I've been playing since 2012, but I'm having to like doing the pod is making the game different. I play the game differently with the pod. I have to like midway through the season, I can't just like fucking fuck off and finish 500K because I don't care anymore. So it's like, yeah. I need to buckle down. And I think one thing that I texted you is just always remember that no matter how sexy a punt is, green arrow is always the most fun, best thing.
Yeah, you always want the greens.
That's it. I mean, like, that's you can it. Take your punts here and there and they feel really good. But if you're just with the herd and just going up steadily every week, like, that's the most fun shit.
Yeah, green arrows is the reason why we play the game, is to try and finish as high as possible. So
yeah,
even though your punt might get, you know, an assist or a goal, it doesn't mean that it's a better pick necessarily than the mainstream template-y type guys like Josh King.
And that's the story of my season. I mean, there's so many weeks where I'd have a really good game week rank because I had a lot of differentials and they would come through. But then the next like 2 weeks or something like that, I would just get severely punished. And yeah, just guys that like neither of us owned all year, just like Hazard, McCauley, Kyle Walker all come through and like our captain blanks. And that just means just massive red arrow, you know?
Yeah.
And just really for no reason other than like our own loyalties and guys we just hate or love, or we're just too emotional.
Yeah, I think that's, we definitely may be a little too emotional about it, but that's also part of the way to have fun. I think we could kind of toe the line, but I mean, I think a good place to start off is just takeaways from the season, because I think this is the first pod all year that I've actually like written stuff down for.
Oh, wow. I barely have anything written down. I can't wait to hear about it.
Role reversal. But yeah. did we have any questions about takeaways, or
should we just
get into it?
Yeah, I mean, we got a lot of fan questions. Thank you for sending it in. I mean, thank you to all our fans all year. Love you guys. But at Mr. Luke Benson on Twitter said, you learn any big lessons this year about how you fundamentally approach the game? So I think that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because looking at my season and your season together, the time we started to really start getting reds and plummeting is the minute we started to take hits.
I didn't take a hit until game week 14. And I was sub 100K like almost that entire time. And then I just dropped like a fucking stone.
Yeah, my first hit this year was game week 15. And before then I was 18K. And then I just started dropping like fucking nightmare every week. And I think staying true to that all season is clearly we failed that test this year. Because before the season started this year, we were very big on not taking hits, as evidenced by us not taking hits for 3 months.
Yep.
But I feel like we both just get antsy, and then we're like, we need to make a drastic move to try and climb up, break in.
We get so antsy, and we get so obsessed with like a guy or something, yeah. You know, and
or
we're just
two
like,
guys, or yeah, the money works
and,
out perfectly
yeah,
for this
ways,
triple
we
swap.
Just, we obsess over hating a guy on our actual team, and we obsess over loving a guy that's not on our team, and that just drives us insane.
Yeah, I mean, we do it every year. Last year when we got rid of Mahrez early because we thought it was time, and it just destroyed us.
It's like game week 9 or something. Yeah. He scored a goal like every other week.
Yeah, and this year it's the same thing. I think we really need to be a lot more measured and tempered in our point hits and stay true. Because realistically, if it's game week 18 or 19 and we're in the like 20K region, like that's fantastic. And you don't need to do anything insane to, you know, to climb. You just need to stay the course.
Stay the course, so, use your chips well. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, chips, that's another category that we'll get to. But I think that's been the number one takeaway for me this year, has been how bad I started doing once I started taking hits. So
one way that, like, I feel like, I mean, obviously we know that 4 points is, I just feel like what I'm trying to say is we think of the 4 points as kind of a short. Yeah, I don't have shit written down clearly. No, I like just woke up an hour ago. I'm about to go like talking head guy on that. That was a weird transition. But like 4 points, we think of it as like a short term hit that we need to make up in 1 or 2 weeks. And that's a fine way to think about it. But when you look at the end of the season, what 4 points really means, it's like
a lot of places.
It's like 10,000 places for me at my rank. You know,
a lot of places.
So, like, if you were to take that in consideration midway through the season when we started taking hits, like in game week 14, if I had, well, maybe next season in game week 14 when I'm getting antsy as fuck, I'll think about it more and be like, yeah, this guy might be better than the guy that I have on my team, but is that worth 10,000 places of risk? And it's almost always no.
Yeah, unless if you're removing an injured zero player, that's a tough
that's
thing.
That's a big difference.
And we need to check each other, too, because we get carried away and then we talk each other into it. But it's
we kind of like, prod each other into like dumb shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you love that guy.
All right, so, yeah, I mean, that's the number one for me. And then I think maybe we could go into the chips, because I think now that we've had 2 years of chips under our belt, I think it's very, 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 very clear that they should not be dictating the way we play the game, and they should be just thought, they should be looked at as an afterthought, because they are so invaluable when you look at the grand scheme of 38 game weeks and all of the wild. I mean, the main chips are the wild cards. Like, those are the chips that matter. The bench.
Those are the by far best chips. Wild card.
Yeah, I mean, they're not even chips. They're just wild card. They're in a different camp for me. But the triple captain is, you know, if you hit it, great. Maybe you'll get an extra 17 points or something, which is significant.
700 points if you did it well this year.
Yeah, but you know, or you miss and you get an extra 5 points or 6 points or whatever. Like, either way, it's not a huge swing. I mean, playing consistently and smartly throughout the season is more important than hitting on your triple captain. Same thing with the bench boost. I mean, if you don't have good players on your bench when you bench boost, then you're probably not going to get a lot of points. I mean, I bench boosted this year into 4 points. It was a disaster. And I think saving the wild card for that second double game week worked out for me hugely, because I flew the last, you know, 4 or 5 game weeks of the season, but I didn't come away much the good by using my bench boost and saving it until then. So I think next season I'm very strongly considering using the bench boost after my first wild card, because after I use my first wild card is when I'm really planning my squad, and I'm going to have like good fourth and fifth defenders, and I'm going to have, you know, I'm going to have a playing second goalkeeper and all that shit.
Right,
because
not
I'm planning
spending
for,
all your money on the 11 for the double.
Yeah, for the double, and then having auxiliary pieces of shit. So and like maybe I'm going to try and look at that window within the next 3 weeks after my first wild card, and usually between game week 3 and game week 9 or something's when I usually play it, and then see if I have some fixtures line up nicely and maybe use it then. That way it kind of gets it out of my head for obsessing about what I'm doing towards the double game weeks, and I can maybe focus a little bit more on my 11. And also I think I always have a better squad in the beginning of the season than towards the end when I'm really trying to put all my money in the pitch. So that's something I'm definitely going to be looking at next season.
It also kind of allows you more room to chase. Like, say you use all your shit early, like you're talking about, but towards the end of the season, you're around like 15K and you're shooting for top 10K. You can maybe, by spending more money on your pitch, do some different things than what the template people are doing who are wildcarding. I don't know. It's interesting. It, like, when I look at Scott's series down the rabbit hole with Scott, like, it obviously was a fucking disaster for him. His shadow team finished like 10,000 places higher than his real team or something like that, where he used his wild card early in actual life, like I did. But what I took away, and I think I talked about this last pod or two pods ago, is that I do still think bench boost is best on Game Week 37, even though it didn't really work out that well this year, just because, as we always say, just getting two dips, two bites of the apple, you have more chance of a return from a bench guy. But we have to focus on getting probably better bench guys next year.
Yeah, but see, that's the issue, is that, you know, you want to do it. But then I'm looking at it at the 2 weeks, where if I'm going to compromise on my, you know, third midfielder and fourth midfielder or something to, like, spread the money around more, I want to have better players in Game Week 38 this year, you know, and I had a really good Game Week 38, and that was part because I had all this money invested
on
my 11.
Pitch. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there are two ways to look at it like that, which is why I also feel like if I wasn't considering the bench boost at all, maybe I would have even picked a better team with my wild card, or maybe I would have used it, you know, in 34 instead, and I would have had been better off towards the end of the season than saving it for 36 to use it on 36. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Counterintuitively to Scott's thing, and I, again, said this earlier in the season, but if I had to do my second half of the season over again, I would have wild carded in, like, game week 20 or something like that. Like, that's when I was, like, really just, from game week 17 to game week 34, I changed 1,000 places.
Yeah, that's not great.
I was just 220. I was just, like, 220 or above that whole period. And I was just, like, fucking saving my wild card, bench boost. You know, I would have used my wild card, the most powerful game-changing thing that we have at our disposal, to change my team and hopefully change my trajectory upward, and then probably still save my bench boost. But saving wildcard for end of the season, it just doesn't make that much sense. Unless, of course, you're flying, and then you shouldn't even use wildcard anyway. Yeah. But,
well, you know, it's both depends on your squad, realistically.
It depends on everyone's situation.
You know, but And I'm not saying that this is the right way or this is the wrong way. That's an impossible thing to say, and that's naive. But what I'm saying is I think flexibility is something I was not having at all this season, which will segue into the next thing I want to talk about. But it's just the rigidity of, like, didn't even consider for a second that I was not going to do wildcard bench boost for the big double game week. And this year, or for next season, I'm definitely going to be thinking more open-mindedly just because the chips are not that powerful. The wild card is powerful. And maybe I would have been better off using my wild card a few weeks earlier than I did. So I think that's just something I think
I think it's good to be flexible and know how powerful or not powerful they can be. And I mean, like much of fantasy, all fantasy sports, there's so much luck involved.
Yeah,
like, I know if you nailed your triple captain this year and got fucking 8 goals from Kane or something, that's amazing. But, like, you're not going to do that every year. Most times you're not going to do that. You have to remember that.
Yeah. So last thing I want to talk about is formation, because...
Yeah, you're hitting all these fan questions. This is beautiful.
Okay, because the formation... I've never not played 3-4-3 since I've played fantasy in my career. This is my fourth season playing FPL. And I think that was my, next to being such a nightmare and bench boost and taking hits, was the other thing that fucked me is I think 3-5-2 this year really opened my eyes up to what advantages we have playing the game versus maybe the casual. When I'm looking at the player pool for the third striker, right, the budget striker guy, you know, under 8, this season you have a rotating bunch of, you know, maybe 5 guys that we're looking at. Defoe, who was really the only good guy, even though it was only for half the season. Austin had a little period. Deeney was always kind of in there. Rondon was in there. But all of these guys realistically are pretty bad.
They're very bad.
And FPL really has priced the players correctly now that everyone that's good is really in that premium bracket. So you have about 12 or so, 13 or so teams that you're looking at their striker, basically, because the top team strikers are all priced too highly. And all those teams are bad, and all their strikers are maybe not even the best attacking fantasy option on their team. And if everyone else in the game, for the most part, plays 3-4-3, you're dealing with the same limited player pool as everyone else for that spot. We're very intense, and we're insane about every little stat and every little fucking thing. And when you look at kind of the midfielders in that mid-priced or lower bracket and how many of them every season emerge to
every
be better. Every season. It's Ramsey, then Mahrez, then King, and Zaha. Every single season, they get priced up, and then... there's a new batch of or a new wave that slips under the radar, and those are the players that kick on, and that's where we as hardcore FPL players make our money. So I think I'm going to look hard at what the player prices look like, but I don't really want to go into next season with, you know, some pretty poor 6.5, 7.5 third striker from a promoted side or someone on Burnley or whatever, just because they have 3 good fixtures in the opening 4. When realistically, I think that mining the midfield options throughout the league with a much more vast player pool, with a lot more opportunity to hit on some good guys, is maybe something that we could take better advantage of as hardcore FPLers. So
yeah,
3-5-2, I think I'm going to give a. I'm going to try my very hardest to abandon my old ways and go for it at game week 1 next year. It'll depend on the player prices, I'm sure, but I'm starting to really think that I want to try it out at least.
Yeah, we need there to be like an Anichibi or something like that. Someone who's nailed would be ideal, you know, in the 4-5-5 million range to enable that.
Yeah, I'm glad you say that, because that is the main issue, right? Because with 3-4-3, we always will find a nailed 4-5 midfielder. There's no question.
There's a million of them. Every team has one.
But finding someone that's under 5-5 who's plays as a third striker is a lot more difficult.
Yeah,
so I think
they're usually like a rotational cog or something like that.
So I think the one thing that you do need to do if you do 3-5-2, at least initially before that, whoever that player is comes away, is investing a little bit more in fourth and fifth defense, because you're going
to
need to rely
yourself
on them. Because if you're going to get an attacker that's really cheap and is in and out of the side or not nailed at first, you're going to need to have someone to cover yourself. So that makes it a little tougher, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up. And I know, what's his name? Mark at FFS was 3-5-2 for like most of the season. He's like top 1K or something. But also on that site that I sent you, it's newpla.net, A-N-E-W-P-L-A.net. You can put in your, like, FPL ID and get all these stats and shit. We both majority played 3-4-3, but you played 3-5-2
wild card for
four times.
A couple times it was for injury, though. I didn't set my team up for 3-5-2 until I wild carded in 36.
Right. Well, according to this, you played it four times, whether it was injury or not. And you averaged 20 points higher than when you played 3-4-3. And I also played 3-5-2 four times, and I averaged 10 points higher than when I played 3-4-3.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all telling because of
it's a small sample. But
it was really good for both of us. We kind of just both went in there and then abandoned it.
Yeah, and it's also looking at game week one when, you know, Kane's going to be 13-14 this year, and he's going to be, you know, the first name in. You're going to have to build your team around him. All of the premium strikers are going to be so expensive. Like, Aguero will be, like, 10. Jesus will be 10. All those fucks will be around 10 at
Ibra,
least.
Ibra, all those guys. And what's Kane going to be, 14 or something?
Yeah.
Actual.
But... yeah, but it's just, it's tough to, you could still go, you know, heavy with three big strikers and maybe Vardy will be 9 or 8.5 as your third striker, but then you have a big cut at midfield and then you only got maybe one premium midfielder and then you got to have two budget.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I don't like the shape as much going like the heavy three, and it's much easier to rotate in and out one forward, you know, if like, Jesus stopped scoring and I'm making up names. Costa is in form. Like that's a simple swap. Whereas midfielders like King pops up out of nowhere. Zaha pops up out of nowhere. You want to like be shifting around your midfielder, like you said, with a much bigger player pool. There's a lot more moves to be made among midfielders.
I mean, the amount of transfers I spent this year on my third striker slot and the amount of blanks I got out of my third striker slots out of control. Like, I had my best third striker this season was Crouch, actual. Like, he was the player that I remember when I got him and he fired for me for a few weeks.
Yeah,
that was the best.
Double digit. Yeah.
Him. And then I had a little luck with Benteke later on, but by and large, I spent so many transfers. I got so many blanks out of that spot. And like you say, in years past, I always feel like they maybe were mispricing players, and maybe they were always kind of a backup on a top team striker who would come in because there was an injury ahead of him or something like that, where we always had a couple of good options, but they're pricing the players a little more accurately, I think, making it a little more difficult for the strikers, and there's just a lack of quality in strikers for the lower sides. It's
we both had Chaz and he died. We both had Rashford.
I had everyone
Ronda Rousey.
Throughout the season.
You had Defoe for like what 10 straight blanks. Yeah, you and Anton Johansson.
Yeah, but I always throughout the season wanted midfielders that I didn't have, and on the opposite side of the spectrum, I never wanted any of the third strikers that I was looking
at. You're just throwing shit at the wall and hoping it sticks, basically. When you're bringing in some fuck on, like, West Brom, when you're bringing in Rondon Rousey, what are you doing with your life? You need to look at yourself in the mirror and be like, I have this player right now on my team instead of fucking Zaha.
So, again, I mean, I'm not saying, similar to when to wild card or the chips, I'm not saying that 3-4-3 is bad and 3-5-2 is good. I mean, 4-3-3 might be great if all these wingbacks come in or whatever.
Yeah, true.
But I think it's, again, just being flexible. And I keep getting rigid thoughts that I can't do this because it's going to fuck my team setup. But realistically, you're always a double switch away from moving from 3-4-3 to 3-5-2 or, you know, 4-3-3 to 3-4-3 or whatever. So I think that's kind of what I'm trying to drive at throughout the theme, is just to be flexible next season and not be so stuck in these, you know, make-believe
rules.
Yeah,
I think it was a very, very early pod. I dropped the flexibility is the key to stability. It was maybe even the name of the pod, but...
when we were good.
When we were young and smart.
All right, the other thing thing about 3-5-2 is when you get fucking clean sheet point from midfielders, just looking at the points of the game, like, defenders are the least valuable because they get negative points for their best attribute. Built in negative points. Like, midfielders get an extra point for a goal compared to strikers, and they get a clean sheet point for doing absolutely nothing. And if you go with 38 extra starts of a midfielder and say you hit on 12 or 13 clean sheets out of that fifth mid spot, that's like a bench boost. Like, you're basically giving yourself another chip almost of just free points. And that also, I feel like, is a little bit of an overrated thing just because it's one point. Or underrated, rather. But it adds up. I mean, if you take 38 shots at that point throughout the season, if you think of, oh, if I got 13 extra points because I got 13 clean sheets out of my fifth midfielder, that's a big amount of, that's a huge amount of points.
Yeah, if you go to that site again that I just said earlier and just look at, like, your most played players throughout the season, like, my most played midfielders are, like, Alexis, Firmino, Ali, and shit. They got a lot of cleans for me. Alexis got 8 cleans for me. Ali got 8 cleans for me. Firmino got 6 cleans for me. That's a lot of fucking points.
And I get, like, right, your fourth or fifth mid, it'll be a little cheaper, so probably not on a top side like a Spurs or a Liverpool, but even still.
6 cleans.
Yeah, those points add up, so. Oh, no, last thing there. So where do you want to go
now? Yeah, I like that. I feel like we should just rapid fire through some fan questions and then call it a day. At Just Starting says, player from this season you would never buy an FPL again moving forward.
I think it's going to be Hazard for me, honestly.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I think I need to just, like, stop bothering because it's the most impossible thing to judge when he's going to go on a hot run and when he's going to go on a cold run. Like, this season towards the end of the year is the most telling thing of his life, is that he has 3 games where he has, like, 2 double-digit hauls and a return and he looks amazing. And then the next 4 games, he has 0 shots on target. And that's what he does every single season. He always finishes with 200-plus points, but I don't have the patience to hold him for a prolonged period of time. I will never captain him. He's definitely not a captaincy option.
Yeah, he's a very bad captain.
I just don't know when he's going to play well. And for those reasons, priced at over $10 million each season, I don't like that. And I also don't like him. Like,
You sound like a Shark Tank guy right now. Oh, and for that reason, I'm out.
Fucking fuck you. But fucking Hazard, dude. He, Madden, infuriates me more than any other player in FPL, and it's been like that forever since I've started playing, basically.
Yeah, he's always been
that
way.
Yeah, this season came to a head. I also just don't like rooting for him. Like, I don't like him. And I don't think I'm going to go into him next year. And he fucked me so hard at the end of the season, throughout the season. Like, he was my main nemesis all year.
Yeah, the game week 37 double, transfer him out, then he scores. Burned so many people. Yeah,
that had been consistent. I think I've owned him on 3 separate occasions this year, and every single time I get him right after a couple good games, and then he goes cold, or I don't know.
Yeah, well, I have a completely different view of Hazard, which is, like, I'm probably going to have him in my team to start and never get rid of him. But that's off topic. To answer the question, my guy would probably be, like, Gaston Ramirez /...
Redmond.
Redmond, Staunch, and, like, Ben Mee or something. Like, guys that were just... Ben Mee got me 2 negative points this season. And he had so many clean sheets. Like, I missed all of his cleans and only got negative points from him. And Gaston is a weird, like, sexy guy who always lures me into something stupid. And then, I mean,
well, not again, he's not just, anymore.
He's horrible.
He's not coming back into the Prem anytime soon, I don't think.
Very bad. Well, doesn't Southampton still own him, I think?
Do they really?
I feel like they loaned him, but I don't know. Just some myths. That's a good question.
Coutinho is tough this year too.
Yeah, the injury really fucked him over.
Yeah, he just kept dying, and I remember I had Mane and Firmino instead of him when he was doing well, even though I was matching points, but I never really had him for
You never had the hauls.
I mean, it was really, I guess, a very brief spell where he came into it between kind of game weeks, like I'm looking at it, like game week 5, game week 6 when he fired, and then he got injured game week 13. So it was really only about 6 or 7 games, and then he didn't really pick it back up.
He ended the season strong.
Yeah, he did end the season really strong, you're right, from like game week 30.
But yeah,
or so,
it seemed like Scott
was tough this year.
Scott was really shouting this out. Like, when he came back off the injury and everyone was like, he doesn't really look good, Scott was the first one to DM me on Twitter and just be like, he's 100% still injured. Like, ankle takes way longer than this. They rushed him back. And he blanked for like two months straight.
Six games or so, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And then he started doing better, but he was, yeah, he was a tough one.
He was tough. At Johnny2607 says, worst transfer of the season. What's your worst transfer of the season? Chaz Austin for me. I brought him in and then he dies.
Yeah, Austin was bad. I have to say, though, I was looking through my season and I just couldn't believe. I kept looking at every week. I had Jordy Amat from game week 1 to game week 36.
No way.
Yeah, I had him in my game week 1 team.
No
way. I kept him in my first wild. I had him until my second wild card.
I'm looking at it. Yep, he's your number one player benched. Like, yeah, you benched him 32 out of 38 weeks.
I got him off the bench for like maybe 2 points all year, something like two separate like times where he got 1 point. And I just cannot believe that I had him all year. It really did hamstring me because I didn't really need to rely on my fifth defender to start him. But there were so many times where I had Holobas and him as my fourth and fifth defenders where I unexpectedly get Holobas off the bench when he has a bad fixture or something. And that was another thing I was thinking of for next season, to try and have a 4 or 5 reasonable fifth defender just in case I can play with my bench order, because it did happen, I think, this year more than most in memory that I got some unexpected players off my bench. So I think I'm going to maybe work a little more towards being disciplined and having better options on the bench. But I think Amat was a nightmare for me.
Yeah, it'd be so nice to have like a good, not even a good defender, a player on a pretty good team as your fourth defender. That would be like such a
delight. Ben Davies. It's just so tough to fit in like a 5 million player there or something like that.
But it might be worth it. It's hard to say.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, especially if I'm going to be looking at 3-5-2, I might need to.
Yeah.
If I'm not going to have a reliable third forward to come off the bench.
But, yeah.
Other than Amat, though, I mean, I did start with Volscheid, who didn't make many points before he went to Germany. I was thinking of the preseason.
He just got straight fucking transferred out.
Instead of having Peters, who was just great for like 3 or 4 months.
And like everyone had Peters, and you were I'm going to go Volscheid.
He's like, producer Nate, I like you. I'm going to go with your guy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Awesome is bad too. But then the last thing I was looking at was really my cheap fourth mid option I did not hit at all this season. I had kind of like Chan, Gundogan situations that were really, really bad for me for like a couple months, not for too short of a period. I didn't really hop on like Joe Allen when he was doing good.
Or
and
King.
King, I mean, forever.
You never
I
had just him,
didn't,
right?
Yeah, I didn't have him all season.
Yeah.
I just didn't really hit anyone back when I was trying to build my team value and until I really put a lot more money in midfield when I was shopping in that sub 6 million price bracket for my fourth mid, I was having some trouble. So
yeah,
it might be also a warning sign for next year if that's going to be my fifth mid and I can't pick him this year. It'll fucking be terrible again next year. What about you?
Funny enough, my two worst transfers were Kane and KDB. I was looking at my season as a whole, like what were my two darkest periods of the season where I just dropped a lot and never really recovered. And the first one was middle of the season. Like I brought Kane in game week 15 for game week 15, 16, 17 when everyone, me, you, Derek, we all captained him and he blanked back to back. He blanked all three of those actually. And I captained him in two of the three. And in that period, Ibra got 3 straight double-digit hauls, and I didn't have him. I had Kane instead. And then, to make it worse, similar with the KDB situation, I then rage-transferred out Kane, and he got 6 goals in his next 4 game weeks.
Yeah, that Watford game.
Yeah, so don't ever transfer Kane out, basically, is
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he's fit. I mean, that's when he's fit. You just got to, if you don't own him when he's fit, you're just not going to have a good
time. It's a suicide. But yeah, that was a nightmare. Just dropping so much because of like Ollie Eriksson Ibra points I wasn't getting and then transferring him out and not getting the Kane points.
Right. Yeah. And then Ibra, like Costa, Lukaku, all of them, like shifting them in and out was very difficult.
It was a frustrating year with them. Yeah. And then KDB, again, like kind of similar. I jumped the gun. I got him in before like the majority of people had him. Kind of like, well, I'll get to that. But I brought him in game week 24. I captained him in 24 and 25. He blanked in both. I was set to transfer him out. And then the City doubles got announced for game week 27. So I was like, okay, fuck. Like, I guess I'll keep Kev. And he ended up playing like 100 minutes over both games and blanking in both. So it's just like, fuck. And then I got rid of him and I was too bitter to bring him back in when he was actually good at the end of the season. God.
Yeah, because I got him in on wildcard in 36 and he averaged over 10 points a game for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's Siggy. And I got him Siggy on my first wild among card. The same things. Like, I got him in for a while. He blanked forever. I got rid of him and then he 2 months of scoring every week. Yeah. It was like, that happened to me several times this year, but what I was going to say is, like, I feel like one of the blunders I made in both of those is it kind of like an American sports fantasy mistake where, like, I'm thinking that getting a guy before he's actually fit or before he hits any form is, like, a significant advantage as it would be in an American sport fantasy, football or something, you know? Whereas, yeah, like,
because no one else can have him.
Because no one else can have him. But in FPL, it's like different. Not really ever worth bringing in a guy who's like not in form or just off injury and you don't really know how they're going to be. Because, like, absolute worst case scenario, they get like a double digit haul and like
when no one owns him,
1% of people own him. Yeah. And then you just bring him in.
Yep.
And so that was my takeaway from both of those scenarios because. In both cases, Kane off injury and KDB when no one had him, I brought him in before anyone, and it did nothing for me, and then ended up hurting me later.
Yeah, that's a tough one, especially when you're playing in a premium bracket, too. I mean, it's one thing if you're taking a risk on the fringe of your squad, but if you're getting someone like KDB when other people have, you know, the Ollie and
Hazard, Alexis, and I captain these guys, too.
Yeah, it's double.
So it's like, both of those periods, I just plummeted and just like pretty much ruined my season.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a good takeaway, though.
Yeah.
Why don't we finish up looking towards next season? I think that's enough dithering and whining about this year.
We've talked it to death. For all other questions you sent in and fans in general.
Yeah, it's been a great season.
It's been a great season. I mean,
had a lot of enjoyment interacting with you guys through email, Twitter. Keep it up throughout the as the next season gets released in July and everything.
Yeah, and we'll do more shit next season. We'll do
maybe we're gonna work on some stuff,
merch, work on shit. There's gonna be another fireside chat in like a week with Walsh and Anton Johansson, and you're bad.
All right, so next season, I know we don't have prices yet, but obviously already thinking kind of about who I'm. Looking at under the radar type picks, what do you maybe at goalie? I jotted some names down, so I'll kind of lead this, and you could tell me what you think. But at goalie, I'm a little concerned that Heaton's going to be at 5-5. What do you think he's going to come in at 5-5 next year?
I don't know. 5-5. I think he'll be 5-5
again.
Yeah, I don't think they don't make goalies 5-5 unless they're like a top six team. I feel like
I know, but it's just the last 2 years Heaton's been in the Premier League, he's led all goalies in points. It's hard.
The consistency of that is tough.
If he's in at 5, that's going to be simple. But the other two I'm looking at are Butland and Flapianz.
Yeah, Butland could come in way undervalued because
he should be 4-5.
Yeah, I mean he should be 5, but he might be 4-5.
On Stoke, keep enough cleans to be worth 5?
I think so because. Like, you just look at Lee Grant. He was so good in that period. And you just think, like, if Butland played all season and wasn't just, like, injured and price dropping and shit. And even at the end of the season, Butland came in, got 2 cleans, one of them a fucking double-digit haul with 2 bones. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
That's fair. If he's at 5, that would probably be appropriate. But
if he's 4-5, that's a fucking incredible pick.
Yeah, 4-5. You got to kind of find that 4-5 guy, I guess. But it's still going to be tough if Heaton's 5, I think, to not just put him in and forget about it.
Heaton almost have to get him. It's just like.
This was when I got him, I immediately started just rolling in goalkeeping points.
I didn't have him all year. And he
was incredible.
He's just. There's no other guy, I mean, I guess Kane, but there's rarely anyone else in the league who you can just almost set and forget and be like, he's going to be the highest scoring player at this position.
Yeah.
I mean, Kane, when I think back to like the preseason pods, I remember I didn't have Ibra at one point in preseason.
Yeah.
And I remember I had Kane and I was like, I mean, like, yeah, Ibra's good, but like Kane's back-to-back golden boots, like Ibra's not going to outscore him. And then... He fucking back-to-back-to-back golden boots, and fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I guess goalie's kind of dull, and then defense also. I don't know. I don't really have much to say about defense yet because it's so dependent on prices, right?
Yeah, the prices and like the wingback syndrome
classification.
Like I know Cahill finished with more points than Alonso, but Alonso didn't start the first like four games of the season or something, and they didn't switch to 3-5-2 until like. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think Cahill's goal scoring is like sustainable.
Yeah, that also tends to be true. Mm-hmm. Goal, like when you look at stats, headed shots are the worst way to score goals. Right. They're like the least consistent returning goals. So it rarely ever happens that like a center back who gets like seven goals or something does it again next year.
Yeah, they come out of nowhere.
They like just McCauley, come out of nowhere.
I mean, you get lucky on it, or you just hit it. Like Terry a couple years ago had a bunch of goals.
Yeah, the ball finds your head one season, and then next season you get one goal. It's weird.
You can't really. I mean, look at Toby this year. He didn't score a goal all year, did he, in the league?
I don't think he had a goal. He had a goal with his feet against Hull in the 7-1 in the last game of the season.
Fine.
Okay. But no, like, but, legit know. Header. Yeah, festival.
I mean,
though.
Like two seasons ago, how many double-digit games did Toby get with a goal and a Clinton? Like, he was doing that all the time.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But yeah, I think we'll have to see prices. But, you know, someone like Trippier, whatever the fuck you say his name, could be interesting. We'll have to see who people buy.
Maybe
like,
Coleman will sneak in because.
5-5 or something.
Yeah, like 5 and being injured. Or VVD, yeah. Van Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to see. But midfield is where I've got, like, guys I want.
You've got guys that you like? Yeah.
So, I mean, first one is Paul. I think Paul, priced right, could be a really good option because his underlying stats were so good.
So good. But will he ever be priced normally?
He should be priced at 7-5.
Of, like, he's the most expensive player in the world on Manchester United. I feel like he'll never get priced fairly.
He should be 7-5 this season.
Like, I mean, it should honestly be like 6-5 or 7. Like his position and stuff. Like, it's not
7-5 at the most.
Yeah, 7-5.
His returns were not better than that. So I mean, if he's 7-5 or under, I think he's an interesting one because realistically, he could have had 8 more assists than he had. I mean, he created so many chances this year,
and he hit the post like
he hit the post a bunch of times,
million times.
I mean, these midfielders I got jotted down are players I'm expecting to come in a little bit under market because I don't need to write down like Eriksen and Ali because they're fucking great.
They're incredible. Everyone who's going to be 10.
Yeah, everyone is going to be 10. Like, we're just going to have to look at the fixtures, flip a coin, and hopefully we get lucky. But so Paul's someone I'm definitely interested to see the price for him. I think Arnautovic also is someone that could fly even further under the radar. I mean, he was 7-5 this year, and he didn't really do it, even though he did have a few bright games. But I don't know if they're going to keep Hughes or not. But if he's at like 7 or something, I think he could be.
He could be tasty.
He could be a good one. I'm also very interested in Bolasie.
He had a great little spell there.
He always does. I mean, his thing is he's going to assist. He's going to get you assists. So he was returning pretty okay earlier this season. But if he comes in at like 5-5. Or whatever, off the injury. I don't know. He could be a really nice bargain, I think, to slot in. Mm-hmm. Got it. I think Siggy's also someone, when you look at every year, it's just, is he really going to be priced over 8? Like, if he's 8 or something, I think that's just, you're still in the gold territory because every single year that he's fit, he finishes up in the top 5 region of midfield points.
Yeah, the consistency is pretty silly, to be honest.
Yeah. So even though he's not, you know, an explosive, sexy option, if he ticks in just under that premium bracket, like at 8, that could be a nice just kind of little point flow.
Yeah.
And then Lanzini, I'm excited about next year, I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited about Lanzini.
Yeah, because if he's going to be getting that free roll number 10, and he's probably going to be on pens, hopefully they stop playing Mark Noble. What do you think he'll be more like at 7? Do you think he'll be over 7?
I don't think he can be over 7. He had a pretty quiet year in West Ham, or had a really bad year.
Sometimes they price those guys. Like this year, there were a lot of 7-5 price guys of guys who like were kind of these types of players.
Yeah, it was kind of unfair.
Yeah. They were priced too highly, and then they priced themselves out of for a lot of us.
Yeah,
they finished with some price drops, and no one had them. I'm interested about Cazorla next year, too, I think. I think in that 3-5-2, he could probably do some really nice things.
He can do nice things no matter the formation. No matter what. And he's on pens and everything. Like,
yeah. I mean, they always get six or so pens a year. I mean, they're not going to have Alexis missing them anymore if he's on the pitch. So he could be a good one. And then the last guy I jotted down is Mahrez. I don't know what he's going to be priced at, but
I don't know where he's going to be priced or what team he's going to be
at. Yeah, if he stays at Leicester and they keep Shakespeare and they kind of keep the majority of that side, the way that he finished up the season looked like, you know, last season. And
he looked fucking good.
I think he should probably max out at 7.5 based on how poor he was this year. That could be a good one. That could be
a really good one. And
he's on pens.
Just one guy to tack on is Wijnaldum, who I know we texted about a little bit. He took a really long time to bet in at Liverpool, and he wasn't starting, and he wasn't scoring or anything. But second half of the season, I mean, all of his goals are at home. he has this weird fucking thing where he cannot possibly score away from home at Newcastle either. But second half of the season, he didn't match his value at 7.5, but he scored some goals. And if he's takes a big price decrease to like 6 or something, because he kind of plays deep lying midfielder. He's not like they expected him to be like number 10 or like one of the front three. Then maybe he could come in.
Yeah, I think if he's somewhere in that 6 region,
6.5.
I don't know. He could
be good there.
Yeah, he could be good. It's still tough to get someone who plays, you know, in the midfield three versus like some guys who are a little more far forward, but.
Yeah,
he could be good. And then I guess like City also is going to be a nightmare. Which City midfielders to pick?
Pep rotation is going to be all time high.
Yeah, it's going to be really difficult. So I don't know. We're going to have like an individual pod just for City when the game comes out.
Yeah, City's going to be brutal.
Yeah, and then,
whoever City gets at goalie or like defense or something, I think I'm going to be interested next year. They tightened up a lot to end the year, and Bravo was fucking horrible. And they had a bunch of cleans to end the season. I mean, pretty much when Kompany came back.
Yeah, well, they have 75% possession every game.
That's why we all had stones.
Yeah, I agree. But I saw they were linked to that, like some child on Porto or something. Ederson or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, or maybe Fuckford.
Kill for Fuckford. But that's it for midfield. Do you have any others besides Genie?
Not many others that spring to mind other than my shout for last week, which was Stanislas.
Yeah, Stan. I mean, Stan underratedly still great points per minute this year.
He had an incredible year. And he finished the year with 3 straight games with a goal. That weird period where he like got benched and then we found out he was injured and he missed 2 months. It was like something shady was happening, but he was really good right before that. And then he was really good after that.
Yeah. I wonder if when they brought him back, he was still injured because he always seems like one of their better players when he plays, but he was on the bench and shit. Like he wasn't starting. I don't know.
He just had like, if you look at his game log, it's crazy. It's like game week 6 through 8, he had goal, then assist, then haul, 2 goals, 2 assists, then dead. And then, like, game weeks 19 through 21, he had 2 assists and a goal, and then ended the season with 3 straight goals.
Yeah, he's good.
He's good. I mean, Bournemouth are weird because they're affordable, but they're going to score, like, the 7th most amount of goals in the league, 6th or 7th.
Defoe next year, I don't know. Defoe might be good again.
Defoe might be really good, yeah.
He'll be on pens.
That there goes our 3-5-2.
Yeah, right. on to strike. I mean, the only 2 other names I jotted down that I think will be cheap and maybe I like Dwight Gale. You know, I always have liked Dwight Gale.
Yeah, Gale could be good. I wonder if they'll like buy, because Newcastle's a big team.
Yeah, they should buy. They should be able to buy. And I mean, if they need someone for Gale to play with.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen so many games of Dwight Gale when he was with Palace, and for however many goals he scored in the championship, he cannot play as lone striker. So, if he's going to be lone striker for them, then that's not going to fly. If they're in like a 4-4-1-1 or something like that, he's just going to be worthless. But if they do play positively and they get someone bigger, I think Gale could be a really good option. And then I still think Andre Gray, there's something in him.
He's good.
I think he's a player.
He's just good.
And I don't. He's just a good player. I feel like he needs to just move because he wants to play Vokes and like Ashley Barnes and like do Sean Dyche things. Then
it would have been cool if Bournemouth bought someone like Gray instead of Defoe.
Yeah, someone younger.
Yeah, like obviously Defoe's better and more proven, but
yeah,
like
better now.
Gray is not fucking good. Burnley are just so negative that he doesn't really get a chance. But
yeah,
yeah, I like the Gray shout. Honestly, Chaz Austin. I mean, like, he tormented all of us all year. We all brought him in, and then he died. And he's going to die at some point next year, too. He dies every year. But he's very, very fucking good. And, like, with his death and, therefore, season totals always kind of bad, they'll never price him over, like, 6'5", I feel like.
Yeah, like 6'5", 7", or something
so
like that.
So he's like, if he starts the season fit, he's a good pick.
Yeah, and I wonder if Gabbiadini might not be a lot better too if he's playing with Austin. And
yeah,
not,
that would
the
be
focal
lethal.
Point.
They would actually score goals at home this year, which would be weird.
As long as Puel's not managing them, they might score. But yeah, there could be some Southampton always has, you know, value because they're always a tough team with how much turnover they have. You never know what they're going to be.
Yeah, and they're not priced like a top team, but they're always like the sixth or seventh best team.
Yeah, sort of similar to like Everton, I'd say. And,
yeah.
You know, those are a couple teams that we always try and find some value in.
And
but
Lucas Perez, I think, could be huge next year.
I mean, if Lucas Perez is priced right, you got to have a
piece. If Lucas Perez is priced
piece.
$3 million, I'll bring him in next year.
So is that it for us? Are we off?
I guess we're off. I'm bummed that Marco Silva is going to Watford. I just remembered as I'm like scrolling through cheap forwards because I hate Watford.
I'm not going to hate them as much with Silva though.
Well, that's why I don't like that he's there because I like him. But
I'm
like,
very nervous about who Palace.
They're a bunch of fucking scumbags. I do not like Watford.
Yeah, I like Jan Mott.
Yeah, I used to like Holobas. He pretty much made it impossible to like this year. Yeah. Deeney is just like a fat fucking asshole. Drake. He is. He's like a
Carrera.
Piece of shit. I like Niang, but he won't be there
Carrera.
Next year.
No, Niang.
My favorite player on Watford, Okaka.
Stefano the Ledge.
Stefano, get him. Yeah. He's like a good Vokes.
Give me Okaka at 4 or 5 next year.
Give me Okaka on West Brom, and he'll score 11 goals.
Yeah, if he was playing in the position of Rondon all season and getting the kind of chances that he did.
Yeah.
Okaka. So the game comes out July. What are we going to do? Do you want to do one in July and go over prices and shit?
Yeah, I think we'll
have to. Is that when we're resurfacing?
Yeah, I think we'll resurface mid-July with a bunch of preseason pods, like maybe some fireside chats with some promoted teams, and we'll maybe get some producer Nate, some guest Jason, some Derek. But yeah, I mean, that's it. Other than the fireside chat in a week from now, that's it for a little bit. Our first ever break, basically.
Yeah, we'll be off for June for sure. And let us know if you guys have any interesting suggestions for what you want us to do for preseason pods. We're all ears because this was our second season done this year, and we're always trying to mix things up and improve the show and make the content more engaging or more helpful for you guys. So if there's something you want to know about, or if you kind of think of a unique take on how we might be able to do some intros for the season, just hit us up on email or Twitter or whatever. We'd love to hear some ideas.
Love to. And maybe we'll get a little Ari remixing his own theme music. Do some new theme music next year.
Oh, could do new theme music. Could freshen it up.
I'm getting excited at that idea.
Yeah, it could be good. But yeah, thanks for a great second season. All you guys who've been tuning in, we've loved podding, loved the interactions with you guys, and we hope the off season finds you well, and we'll be here. And we'll see you next season.
See you there. Check us out. FMLPL.com. Follow on Twitter @FMLPL. Email us FMLPL@gmail.com. Like on Facebook, right on iTunes.